Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Author Chats. I'm Elizabeth Kelly. Today, I am pleased to have with me DJ Jaffe, the Executive Director of MentalIllnessPolicy.org and the author of a compelling new book titled Insane Consequences, How the Mental Health Industry Has Failed the Mentally Ill. Welcome, Mr. Jaffe.
Thanks for having me on to talk about these issues.
Thank you for joining us. One of the things that you trace in Insane Consequences is the process of deinstitutionalization and transinstitutionalization. Please describe for our listeners what those two terms mean and why in particular they are so accountable for the condition of mentally ill people in this country?
Well, there's a myth that people have been deinstitutionalized, that we've closed hospitals and this has led to deinstitutionalization. And what it really did is it resulted in transinstitutionalization, the movement of people from hospitals to jails. So I have a chart in my book that shows what the total number of seriously mentally ill hospitalized were circa 1960, and it's in the 500,000 range, and how many circa 1960 were incarcerated, and it was very little. And then I have a chart that compares those same numbers today, and you see it's virtually the same. The same number of people are institutionalized, but they're now 10 times more likely to be in jails as they are hospitalized. So we never really deinstitutionalized, we simply moved it. The other myth is that this was a product of the past, but psychiatric hospitals for the seriously mentally ill are still being closed today.
I want to follow up on a couple of points you raised in that answer. First of all, why do you start with the 1960s? And secondly, what do you mean by serious mental illness?
I started in the 60s mainly because that's when I had data, and also it's when the trend towards transinstitutionalization, closing hospitals and moving them to jail, started. So that's why I started then. The seriously mentally ill, 100% of the population can have their mental wellness improved. There are 18% who have some form of mental illness as described in the American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, DSM. However, there are 4% who have a very serious mental illness, and that's defined as one that dramatically affects their ability to function and to provide for their own needs. So it's not defined by diagnosis, it's defined by the severity of the impairment. Now, in reality, the bulk of the people who have serious mental illness have either schizophrenia or treatment-resistant bipolar disorders. But other people can be seriously mentally ill too. For instance, some people with OCD live a relatively normal life. They go to work every day, while others are so fearful they didn't turn out the light that they can't go to work. So one of them may have a serious mental illness and the other doesn't.
You mentioned earlier that a huge portion of our people with mental illness land in jails and prison. Why is it, for instance, that sheriffs like Tom Dart in Chicago have refused to let any more of the mentally ill into their institutions?
Well, what's going on is that the mental health system has largely abandoned the most seriously ill. What they're doing is they're improving mental wellness in the 100% who can use their mental wellness improved, or they're addressing the 18%. But they're offloading the most seriously ill to jails and prisons by neglecting them. And what the mental health industry generally wants to do is then criticize criminal justice for handling the mentally ill inadequately. But the criminal justice system steps in when one condition is met. The mental health system failed. So rather than pointing the finger at criminal justice officials, we should be making the mental health system fail less. Sheriff Tom Dart's been a hero in this area, Judge Leifman in Florida, and many more in criminal justice are exceedingly concerned about the inadequate care received by the seriously mentally ill by the mental health system, and are trying to return care and treatment of the seriously mentally ill back to mental health systems.
If you've just tuned in, we're talking with DJ Jaffe, the author of an important new book titled Insane Consequences, How the Mental Health Industry Fails the Mentally Ill, published by Prometheus, with a foreword by E. Fuller Torrey, the founder of the Treatment Advocacy Center. Now, throughout the course of Insane Consequences, you are a passionate advocate for something called AOT, or assisted outpatient treatment. Briefly describe for our listeners what AOT is and why, in your view, it is so important and so needed.
Well, again, it's for a very small population. Most of the people with mental illness are not violent. Even most people with serious mental illness are not violent. But there is a subset of the seriously mentally ill who, when they go untreated, do become either violent, arrested, homeless, incarcerated, suicidal. For a small percent, for that small group, which has a history of violence or arrest or homelessness or needless hospitalization, AOT allows a judge to order them into mandated and monitored treatment while they stay in the community. So basically, oftentimes a judge says, you got to stay on your meds or you got to stay in this rehab program while you continue to live in the community. It has been shown to reduce homelessness, arrest, incarceration, suicide in about the 70% or better range each. It saves taxpayers 50% of the cost of care because it replaces expensive inpatient treatment or incarceration with much less expensive outpatient treatment. It's also more humane and less restrictive than involuntary inpatient treatment. It is perhaps the most successful, significant, useful program for this very small group of the most seriously ill.
Now, you raised a ton of issues, and I want to pursue several of them. First of all, you are roundly criticized by civil libertarians because they allege that AOT is a profound violation of a person with mental illness's civil liberties. How would you respond?
Well, them claiming it, that doesn't make it so. It is courts that decide what violates civil liberties and what doesn't, and courts have always determined that this is
isn't AOT forced medication?
No, there's no provision in AOT that allows forced medication. It's another myth spread by civil libertarians. The criteria under which somebody can be involuntarily medicated have been spelled out in court decisions both for the incarcerated and for the unincarcerated, and there is nothing in AOT laws that supersedes what the Supreme Court has already decided. So forced medication is not part of any law. Now, the court may order you to take medication, but the court would never enforce it. So they are coercing you to take it, but you get a lawyer as part of these hearings, and they're going to tell you, well, you can just ignore that. So it's one of the many myths spread by civil libertarians who believe that being psychotic is a right to be protected rather than an illness to be treated. Even John Stuart Mill, the father of unbridled civil liberties, said in On Liberty, we are only talking about people in the maturity of their faculties. Well, when you're talking about persons with serious mental illness, currently psychotic, they are not in the maturity of their faculties. And using the rubric of civil liberties to send people to jails where all their civil liberties are taken away. Their right to associate, their right to move about, their right to make determinations is taken away is fairly ludicrous.
Now, approximately how many jurisdictions in the United States have AOT statutes on the books?
I think it's 46 at this point, but very few of them use it robustly.
And why is that?
It's mainly because of the mental health system, and it's a tempest in a teapot. The public supports this, and in fact, they were going to put it on the ballot in San Francisco, but decided not to because they knew the public would support it. It is overwhelmingly supported by police, criminal justice. It's overwhelmingly supported by those who deal with the seriously mentally ill, those who have family members. And by the way, it's overwhelmingly supported by those in AOT. The studies have shown it helps them get well and stay well. So there isn't much opposition except from within the mental health industry, because AOT forces them to accept people who they have previously offloaded. The court order can not only compel the person to receive treatment, it can compel the mental health system to provide it. And if two people go into a mental health program, one needs marriage counseling and one's homeless, psychotic, and been eating out of dumpster, the mental health programs do not want the psychotic individual. They want the easier to treat individual. So it's only a tempest in a teapot within the mental health industry, which no longer has expertise in the seriously ill, that opposes this. But the politicians believe that they are the experts, and so the politicians defer to them. The mental health industry's control over politicians is as strong as the financial industry's control over them or other big industries.
We're talking with DJ Jaffe, the author of Insane Consequences, How the Mental Health Industry Fails the Mentally Ill, published by Prometheus Books. And Mr. Jaffe is the executive director of Mental Illness Policy Org, a nonpartisan think tank creating detailed analysis concerning the mentally ill. Now, you raised a statement several moments ago that many of our listeners may think that they misheard. You said that the seriously mentally ill are nonviolent. What about South Carolina and Tucson and Aurora, mass shootings in those areas perpetrated by profoundly mentally ill young men?
Because it's the mentally ill, the 18% who have a diagnosis are not more violent, but seriously mentally ill are not more violent when treated. So all these instances are associated with individuals who had serious mental illnesses. In almost all cases, were known to both the mental health system and the criminal justice system, but were still allowed to go without treatment. And one of the things the mental health industry does is they try to divert attention from violence. So whenever there's violence, they come out with the platitude, the mentally ill are no more violent than others. And that is true when stated that way, but it's misleading because the untreated, seriously mentally ill are more violent and more likely to be arrested and homeless and incarcerated and all have all sorts of other profound things happen to them. And as a kind and compassionate society, we have to offer treatment. I have a seriously mentally ill relative. I've been on all the major mental health boards. I am looking to help the seriously mentally ill, but largely the mental health industry, Mental Health America, National Alliance on Mentally Ill at the national level, not at the state and local, but they have shunned the seriously ill. They think admitting that some people do become violent is stigmatizing to the nonviolent majority. And so what they're more interested in doing is preventing stigma than delivering treatment that could prevent these instances.
Final question for you. One of the barriers you cite in your book to treatment of the seriously mentally ill is the IMD exclusion. Describe for our listeners what the IMD exclusion is.
If you're Medicaid eligible and have an illness in any organ in your body Medicaid pays for your long-term hospitalization, with a single exception. Medicaid does not pay for individuals between 18 and 64 who have a mental illness and need long-term hospitalization. It's federally sanctioned discrimination against the mentally ill. It's why we have state psychiatric hospitals and we don't have state liver hospitals or state heart hospitals. States had to set these up because the federal government wouldn't pay for treatment of the seriously mentally ill who needed long-term care. President Trump has recently announced he may reconsider that for people with substance abuse. And the question is, if he allows reimbursement for substance abusers, will the few hospitals that are left, around 30,000 long-term beds, will they kick the more mentally ill out now to make room for substance abusers who they can get reimbursed for?
That will have to be the last word. Thank you so much for joining us here on Author Chats. We've been speaking with DJ Jaffe, the author of Insane Consequences, How the Mental Health Industry Fails the Mentally Ill, published by Prometheus Books. Please remember, injustice anywhere threatens justice everywhere. Have a good day.